Cornwall, December 1980. Roma came back to a wet December where Christmas lights shone in shop windows and street puddles and people avoided her. It was a tragic accident, not unfamiliar in a community where men were lost at sea and women survived, and she had survived. Now it was time to get on with her life. She should be thankful. Be thankful, Roma, they said, although they never said what it was she was supposed to be thankful for. Perhaps that she was alive, not drowned, merely drowning. People were kind. Her mother Doreen, her friends, her sister Georgia, who came for a week but then disappeared back to her family. She was young, they said, 27, with a whole life ahead of her. She would find love again, for sure. She nodded and agreed and thanked them, while through her underwater fog she looked for Jack everywhere. In every face she saw on every street, in every passing car, while she listened for his voice and longed for just one touch of his hand on her arm. They talked about what they would do when they got back. They might have babies, they said, make a family, buy a house, perhaps one with a garden, London, Cornwall, wherever they pleased. They talked of settling down, how she would paint and he would start up a business, or how they might go on travelling forever till they were too old to move. Then anything had seemed possible. And everything promised in that bright, hot world of tarlies and banana leaves, in a world where red temples burned with sweet perfume that took their breath away, where there was no past and no future, and when Roma had felt more alive than ever before. Now time had ceased. Doreen put up the Christmas tree in the lounge while she hummed the Christmas number one, There's No One Quite Like Grandma. Roma supposed her mother thought it would be a comfort, that Christmas would somehow make things better. After all, who could not succumb to festive cheer, carols and brass bands, charity and people worse off than you? There are people worse off than you know, Roma, said Doreen. Have a sherry, some trifle, a turkey and sausage meat sandwich? No, oh well, I expect you'll fancy some later. Really, when there's so many people starving in the world, it seems wrong, doesn't it? I expect you'll know all about that after your travels. There's a lot of things don't really seem fair when you think about them, do they? It was then that Doreen got into the habit of conducting conversations with herself. And Roma remained for the most part silent, listening to the crash of the rollers and the cracking of crows in her head. When Christmas moved into the new year and the poinsettia on the lounge table faded, Roma cut her hair. Doreen was shocked. My God, Roma, what have you done? You look like next door's mongrel. Thanks, Mum. But really, Roma, you can't go about looking like that. Roma knew she would have to do something to get out from under her mother's watch, but going back to London seemed impossible. She knew if she went back, she would see Jack everywhere. She would see him forever, like she had that first night, framed by the long window, wiry body, handsome blonde looks, and then smiling at her as he did when he left whoever it was he was talking to and started walking towards her. She was different, he said, an orphan in a storm, a waif with her wild afro hair, really, a perm gone wrong, then grown out to look better than Roma could have dared hope. Her slender face and her blue boiler suit cinched in at the waist with its oversized belt. She was beautiful, he said. No one had said that before. He loved her big hazel eyes and the habit she had of chewing her bottom lip. He liked her quiet and her stillness. It was true. She'd always been a quiet child in Georgia's noisier shadow. A dreamer, they said at school, a looker on, an artist. Mr. Parry The art teacher at her school told her mother she should paint every day, but Doreen hadn't really known what to make of that. No, she couldn't go back. Roma couldn't go back to the places she'd been with Jack, to a life that hadn't been working before they met. She'd find something here, anything, and in the meantime, she did the only thing she could think of doing, which was to get out of the house as much as possible and go walking. It got her out from under her mother's feet, and it gave her the space to mourn and be with Jack. Whenever Roma left the house, she turned her back on the sea and headed off instead along the lanes and out across the fields into the winter countryside, and more than once found herself drawn towards Trescombe, a great sprawl of land owned by the Russell family. It acted like a magnet, pulling at her limbs, calling to her, its voices swirling in the air and threaded on the wind. She'd gone there often with Georgia. All the children went there, and they knew the high path through the woods and into the jungle like their own narrow streets. On rare occasions, they'd ventured out from its dark and tangled interior to the edge of the garden, where they would glimpse the house lying silent, a brooding fortress crouching behind walls of brick and hedges of yew. In those days, the jungle paths were choked with monster shrubs and clawing brambles. Making their way through them then, they were like travellers in time, entering a secret world, a child's paradise. They stopped going after the drowning. The grown-ups warned them against it, frightened them as best they could, and the garden lost its gentler fascination and became a menacing, ghostly place inhabited by bad spirits and the voices of dead children. Now the jungle had been cleared and it was easier to find a way through. It was newly planted with bamboo and tree ferns that caught the low light of winter filtering through the canopy. The silted ponds had been dug out. When the snow came in on the east wind, and it snowed all morning, thick and soft, quilting the land, Roma made for the jungle then, determined to be alone with Jack. She imagined him at her side, looking up at the palms weighted down with snow. She saw the ghost of him in the pale, feathery bamboo. Although Roma told her mother she was looking for a job, but definitely not a teaching job, Doreen said, "I don't know why, Roma. Teaching seems ideal to me. It's what you were doing in London, isn't it, before you met... Well, think of the holidays. If you ask me, teachers have got it easy, and besides, you've got the qualifications." "I'll think about it," said Roma, who had no intention whatsoever of going back to anything she'd done when she was with Jack, but saw little point in arguing. Instead, she went out, avoiding the town, to the jungle, and day by day watched the slow retreat of winter. It was Easter Saturday when she met Nancy. She saw her by the old aquarium in the wide arms of the harbour, about the closest Roma ever came to the sea. The entrance fee to the aquarium, 50p, was chalked up on the blackboard propped against its peeling exterior. At the entrance, an indifferent youth sat in a box, listening to music and issuing tickets. Inside could be glimpsed tanks of murky seawater inhabited by eels and crabs and the odd sea bass. Nancy was sat in the spring sunshine on the low wall outside the aquarium, eating a sandwich. It was the first time Roma had seen her since coming back. She'd wanted to call her, but she'd been worried she wouldn't know what to say. Nancy looked the same as ever, sleek dark hair, fine bones and lipstick. Roma was suddenly conscious of her mongrel cut and wondered what Nancy would think. If Nancy thought anything, she didn't say, just jumped up and called out, "Roma," and ran towards her with her outstretched arms. "I heard about it, the accident, I mean," she said, as she put her arms round Roma. She smelled of expensive French perfume and seawater. "Did you get my card? Are you all right? Let's sit down." She led Roma back to the harbour wall and sat down, patting the wall for her to sit beside her, Do you want some of this? She held up half a sandwich. A fringe of limp lettuce escaped its crusts, along with a thread of tomato skin and a yellow crumb of egg yolk. Roma smiled and took the offering and sat down beside her. She tried hard to remember Nancy's card and what it said. They ate in silence with the sun on their backs, listening to the fishing boats jostling within the harbour wall. And the sandwich tasted better than anything Roma had tasted in a long time, and she knew she should have gone looking for Nancy before. "What are you doing now?" Nancy asked. "Are you staying long? Are you working?" "I'm staying for a while at least. I need to get a job badly, but you know, it's all seasonal stuff. I have to do something soon. I don't know what. Are you still teaching at Rosemount?" "God, no. I gave that up over a year ago. Too many kids, too many problems. I used to have nightmares about it, up and down from top school to bottom. I used to dream I couldn't find my class. I was always in the wrong place, or too late to take the class, or dressed in my fleecy pyjamas with no makeup. I always swore I'd never be a teacher. It was the last thing I wanted to do. And there I was, sweating at every bell, dribbling like a Pavlovian dog. The staff room was the worst, of course, full of dry old women, virgins, if you ask me." They laughed. "Now, does that sound like me?" "I don't think so. No, teaching was not for me, definitely not." "So what are you doing?" Roma was sure Nancy would have found something she wanted to do. "I'm working in the ship, mostly in the evenings. Doesn't pay much, but it's good fun. Plenty of people around and one or two men, of course." She raised her eyebrows. "I've been painting a bit too. Maybe sell a few this summer, if I'm lucky." Roma had been friends with Nancy since school. They went away to different colleges, but always saw each other when they came home for Christmas, going for a drink or out shopping. She'd seen less of Nancy once she'd met Jack. She'd seen less of everyone. But Nancy met him a couple of times, once when Roma took him to Nancy's parents' shop and gallery at the corner of Silver Street. Nancy worked there most summers, and Roma sold the occasional picture there too, prints for the tourists, sunny seascapes and rock pools with starfish. "You know, I liked Jack," Nancy said, as if reading her thoughts. "Yes, I know, he liked you. He said you were different, like me. He says..." "There's casual work," said Nancy. "The shop will be opening soon. You can always see Dad about selling your stuff. Are you painting? You should be. You're too good not to. Always were much better than me. I've never had the patience for it, really." Roma shook her head. "I'm not doing anything, just trying to get by, going mad at home with Mum. Just get out as much as I can. She means well, I know, but she says I look like a mongrel." "Well, I hate to agree with her, but she's got a point. Bloody hell, what did you use, a blunt razor?" "No, I did not," said Roma, smiling. "Anyway, I like short hair. Short hair suits me. My hair was like this when I was 16, and so was yours, come to think of it." "Well, maybe, but they're short and they're short, and we're not 16 now, for God's sake. Still, sod the hair, it'll grow. But you've got to do something, Roma. You must start painting again. At least it'll help. It's bound to." Roma nodded in agreement. Painting would help, she knew it. Painting would fill her consciousness, stop her thinking. The trouble was the blank paper, making the first mark. "Hey, do you remember Will Trant?" said Nancy suddenly. "Went to school with us. Never had a girlfriend, as far as I can remember. He's the head man, or gardener, or something, out at Trescombe. He's looking for an artist, someone to illustrate an old manuscript. He was asking Dad the other day. You'd be good at that. You remember him, don't you? He lives there now at Trescombe. Tall, serious bloke. Good looking. Single, too." Nancy grinned at her. "Is he?" Roma grinned back. "Trust you to know." "No, I don't think I do remember him," she said. "I'll find out from Dad," Nancy persisted. "It's worth looking into. Get you back in the swing. I'll find out. And I'll call you."